The following is a closed circuit advisory and not for broadcast. Newscast number 2040 is an expanded edition of Amateur Radio Newsline containing a special report on Pearl Harbor Day in the third and final segment. This newscast has three segments and there are two breaks for identification. And now here's this week's report. Amateur Radio Newsline report number 2040. With a release date of Friday, December 2nd, 2016, to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. An amateur radio operator is killed by a suspect being pursued by police. Hams assist with shelter communications during Tennessee wildfires. An uninhabited Hawaiian island comes alive with radio. And we share memories of Pearl Harbor in December 1941. All this and more as we bring you Amateur Radio Newsline Report 2040 in an expanded edition this week.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's first independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now reporting from Charleston, West Virginia, here's Jim Dameron, NATMW.
As Amateur Radio Newsline went to production on Thursday, December 1st, this news broke about the tragic killing of an amateur radio operator in Chicago. Tyrone Hardin, KD9ERC, who worked as a railroad security guard, was fatally shot after his vehicle was stolen by a man being pursued by police for an earlier car theft. He was pronounced dead of bullet wounds to the abdomen at South Suburban Hospital by the Cook County Medical Examiner's Office. It was 6:25 p.m., not quite 2 hours after the shooting occurred on Saturday, November 26th. Tyrone got his license after testing with the 220 MHz Guys Amateur Radio Club in Chicago. Police have issued a warrant for 24-year-old Rashad Williams of East Hazelcrest. He is being charged with first-degree murder in Tyrone's killing. His wife, Gwinnett Oliver, told the Chicago Sun-Times he was working the security guard post as a second job so he would have enough money to give his family a nice Christmas. She said he assured her the job wasn't dangerous. Tyrone Hardin was 38 years old and the father of a 5-year-old son. The ham community also lost a radio amateur on November 23rd, one with a long, interesting, and varied life. A proud World War II veteran, he was also a former child actor. Amateur Radio Newsline's Kent Peterson, KC0DGY, spoke recently with his daughter.
Jerome Schatz, W2MFW, has become a silent key. If the name doesn't quite ring a bell, then maybe Jerry Tucker does. Still don't know the name? Here's Jerry's daughter, Renee Wolf, KC2SXN.
He got his start by being at a prize fight with his father. And the act that didn't show up between the fights, my grandfather put my father in the ring, and he recited the poem Gunga Din from memory, and there was a man from Paramount in the audience, and that's how he got his start, and off to California they went.
Yes, Jerry was a child actor. His screen name was Jerry Tucker, and his debut was the 1931 Buster Keaton comedy, Sidewalks of New York, which was followed by his first Our Gang comedy, Shiver My Timbers. With his freckled complexion, he fit in perfectly with the rest of the Our Gang comedies. In his favorite episode, Hi Neighbor, he played a rich snob who uses his fancy fire engine to win the affections of a pretty blonde girl.
He worked with not just the Our Gang. He worked with Shirley Temple, Marie Chevalier, Clark Gable, Carol Lombard. He was in a lot of movies, but he's well known for his Our Gang comedies. When he left show business, they always say that Jerry Tucker, that was his stage name, died, and Jerome Schatz, or Jerry Schatz, became alive again. If somebody brought it up, he absolutely would talk about it, but he would never be the one to bring it up.
Jerry was introduced to radio when he joined the Navy during World War II.
He was a radio man on the destroyer ship. Sometimes he was a radio man, sometimes when they were in battle, he was shooting a gun. I think when he got out of service, that's where it came. So he was always, in my lifetime, a ham radio operator. As a matter of fact, he taught ham radio in adult education at a Copaig High School for a few years.
Renee studied for her ham ticket and one day totally surprised her father when she called him on the air.
And then I came out to my car and I called him. I totally shocked him. It's not easy to do.
Renee says Jerry was an active ham until his wife became ill. He was devoted to her, and his ham radio activity dropped off.
He was a child actor. He was a Mason. He was a Shriner. He was an Odd Fellow. He was a World War II disabled vet, 2 Purple Hearts. He was a ham radio, but most of all, he was my dad. If you ask my father what he is most proud of between the R Gang and the Navy, he will always say the Navy.
Jerome Schatz, W2MFW, was 91. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Kent Peterson, KC0DGY.
Deadly wildfires are in the news again, consuming hundreds of buildings in and near eastern Tennessee's resort towns of Gatlinburg and Pigeon Forge. While no ham operators were asked to step in and assist local authorities, hams have been helping with communications at American Red Cross shelters housing evacuees. Keith Miller, N9DGK, the Tennessee section manager for the ARRL, told Amateur Radio Newsline in an email that amateurs were specifically advised not to self-deploy, but simply to remain vigilant in case the situation changes. Amateur Radio Newsline will follow this story and post any updates on our Facebook page and in our Twitter feed. Meanwhile, we hope everyone stays safe. What could be better than being on an island in Hawaii? Being on an island with your rig and antenna and no one else. Amateur Radio Newsline's Neil Rapp, WB9VPG, has the story.
Now here's a type of rare island activation story you don't hear about very often. Eric Brundage, KH6EB, is on Kahoholawe Island for 10 days every month where he and an assistant run a base camp to support Hawaii's efforts to restore the island, which is an old Navy facility. But during his free time, Eric operates 20 meters using a hex beam from the otherwise inaccessible island.
The island was given back to the state of Hawaii in 1994, but the Navy retained access to the island so they could do a cleanup operation to try and clean up the unexploded ordnance that was all over the island. That cleanup effort lasted until about beginning of 2004. Unfortunately, that cleanup effort wasn't complete. They only did about 75% of the island, and so there's still a risk of unexploded ordnance throughout the island. Of that 75%, only about 10% of the island was cleared subsurface. So there's still a lot of buried unexploded ordnance on the island.
You can contact Eric to set up a schedule, but he is generally on the air from 6 to 7 a.m. Hawaii Standard Time, also 5 to 7 p.m., and again from 8 to 11 p.m. The next time Eric will be on the island is from December 12th through the 21st. Eric just put up a new antenna, which for the time being restricts him to only 20 meters.
Recently I picked up a KAO hex beam, and I just put that up this week, and that's only a single band hex beam. I've been working exclusively 20 meters starting this week, mostly JT65 and PSK31, a little bit of single sideband. I'm hoping that in the future to set up another antenna where I can go ahead and get on 15 and 40 meters as well, but for right now I'm limited to the 20 meter band.
Kahoholawe Island may be a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, as it may be problematic to gain access to Kahoholawe once the island is restored. Eric explains how the island counts for IOTA.
All of the state of Hawaii is a single IOTA number, OC019. Kahoholawe does have a different U.S. islands number, which is HI026S, and that information is listed on the front of the QSL card. I do Logbook of the World, EQSL, and also Direct. I have a special card made up for Kahoholawe that has a picture of the island on it, and the backside has some additional information about the history of the island.
If you'd like to schedule a contact, Eric can be reached via email at wh6eey@gmail.com. Reporting for Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Neil Rapp, WB9VPG.
Time for you to identify your station. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the 2-meter repeater of the Great South Bay Amateur Radio Club in Lindenhurst, New York, on Mondays at 8 p.m., and on Sundays at 7:30 p.m. on Simplex at 147.535 megahertz. The good news is that one New York ham got his balloons and tracker to travel the globe. The bad news is he can't find them. Amateur Radio Newsline's Skeeter Nash, N5ASH, has the details.
All Mike Hodgnowski, KD2EAT, may want for Christmas are his missing balloons and his home-built tracker. He launched them in mid-October from Cornell University, where he works as a systems engineer. 1 month later, after they circumnavigated the globe, the balloons crash-landed. Maybe. Maybe not. But they're somewhere. The question is, where? Mike traced them to rural Landoff, New Hampshire, somewhere on a slope with an elevation of 1,000 to 1,300 feet. He believes his tracker is somewhere in the mountains, and he's already been back twice to look for it. He even got help from one of the local ham clubs and others who want to send up their drones, but so far, no luck. The tracker, unfortunately, is now offline, and he told the New Hampshire Union Leader newspaper that he's thinking it was downed by a storm and probably fell or broke one of its solar panels. Mike said in an email to Amateur Radio Newsline, quote, "The level of interest has been astounding, frankly. I'm hoping someone in their back 40 collecting firewood or a hunter stumbles upon it and recognizes the tracker. It would be a thrill to have it back," end quote. It seems that hope can be like one of those missing balloons, buoyant and floating, but hopefully, in this case, not destined to crash. Mike asks, if anyone spots the balloons and tracker, please email him at kd2eat@gmail.com. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Skeeter Nash, N5ASH.
Two special event stations on two special World War II battleships are marking one historic day, December 7th, 1941. Let's hear more from Amateur Radio Newsline's Mike Askins, KE5-CXP.
Members of the Tri-State Amateur Radio Association in Huntington, West Virginia, are honoring the noted World War II battleship, the USS West Virginia. The ship sustained severe damage at Pearl Harbor, where it was among those ships struck by aerial torpedoes and bombs dropped by Japanese aircraft on December 7, 1941. The damage ultimately caused the ship to sink to the harbor bottom, but she was eventually raised and put into dry dock for repair and did return to service in the Pacific, including the Battle of Leyte Gulf, Iwo Jima, and Okinawa, as well as being one of the ships sent to secure the Japanese surrender in Tokyo Bay in 1945. Taking pride in this namesake ship, W8VA will operate on 20 and 40 meters on Saturday, December 10, between 1500 and 2300 UTC. Special QSL cards will be available. In Los Angeles, California, hams will operate from the battleship Iowa on Wednesday, December 7, in memory of the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor. The amateurs will be active as NI6BB and will be on the air on board the ship from 1800 to 2300 UTC. One group, known as the Gray Radio Gang, will be operating using legacy gear on 40 meters. The main team of operators will be on the air using both CW and on SSB on other bands, including 20, 10, and 17. For more details about the specific frequencies, visit the website, biara.org. Built in Brooklyn, New York, the USS Iowa was commissioned in 1943. In that same year, it crossed the Atlantic Ocean with President Franklin Roosevelt for meetings with British Prime Minister Winston Churchill and Soviet Premier Joseph Stalin. The ship opened as a floating museum in July 2012. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Mike Askins, KE5-CXP.
As most kids will tell you, good things come from Santa's workshop, and something very special came out of last year's special event known as the W2S New Jersey Santa's Workshop. The first-time event led to this year's repeat of that event, which begins Saturday the 10th of December and concludes on Friday the 23rd of December. Be listening carefully and keep the children nearby. According to Chuck Weber, W2CCW, you never know when St. Nick will show up in the shack, and he has a QSL card with a special message for everyone. Youngsters on the Air, or YOTA, has a special program for December. as we learn from Amateur Radio Newsline's Jeremy Boot, G4NJH.
December is the month for giving gifts, and young radio amateurs in IARU Region 1 have a special present to give young people curious about what it's like to get on the radio. Amateurs of 25 years old and younger are activating stations all month long through the Youngsters on the Air program, or YOTA. In Algeria, station 7X2 YOTA will operate from the headquarters of Amateurs Radio Association in Algiers. In Lebanon, youngsters will gather in a school to operate as OD5RI/YOTA. At the Vilnius University's Amateur Radio Club station in Lithuania, students will be on the air as LY5YOTA. The station in St. Lucia, J62YOTA, will operate from the shack, or, if the weather is favourable, indeed, at the beach. The YOTA programme encourages amateurs around the world to listen for these and other stations, remembering that these are young hams or youngsters who are hoping one day to get their amateur licence. You can identify most of these special stations because of the YOTA suffix on their call sign. With any luck, you may be the contact they pull out of the first pile-up. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jeremy Bucci for NJH.
There's another event geared toward enthusiastic youngsters, an essay contest, as we hear from Amateur Radio Newsline's Heather Emby, KB3TZD.
In 500 words or less, can you sum up your feelings about amateur radio, what it means to you, and what your hopes are for your future on the air? If you're between 12 and 18 years of age, a resident of one of the 48 contiguous United States, and are licensed as a technician or higher, it might just pay to put some of your thoughts on paper. The Dave Kalter Youth DX Adventure is running an essay contest for a complete ham station, and the youngster whose words capture the judge's attention most will end up with a nicely equipped shack. The prize includes an Alinco SR8T HF radio, a Jetstream 12-volt 30-amp power supply or equivalent, a Jetstream JTV 680 vertical antenna or equivalent, and 100 feet of coax feed line fitted with PL259 connectors. The co-founders of the DX Youth Adventure and this year's raffle winner, Paul Ewing, N6PSE, are the generous donors behind this competition. There's bound to be a pileup, so act fast. Postal mail entries or email entries should be either postmarked or electronically dated by midnight of December 23rd. For rules and an entry form, visit qsl.net/N6JRL. Winners will be announced by January 31st. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Heather Emby, KB3TZD.
If you're looking for successful young amateurs, look no further than the Schofield Middle Club in Aiken, South Carolina. The results from the ARRL School Club Roundup are in, and the student club placed first nationally in the middle school category, scoring 252,170 points. Known as the RAM, Ham Radio Club, with the call sign N4SMS, the club scored a repeat of last year's first-place victory. A report in the Aiken Standard newspaper notes that the students made a total of 835 contacts in those 5 days in October, and that included 17 other clubs, 19 countries, 47 states, and 7 provinces. The students operated from their school shack, not far from the cafeteria, where the food no doubt helped fuel their success. In the world of DX, find Alex RD1AV at the Russian Vostok station in Antarctica, where he is working from the 10th of December until February 2017. He'll be using the call sign RI1ANC. Listen for him on CW, SSB, and digital. His QSL manager is RN1ON. Listen for Dave, W5CW, using the call sign VP5/W5CW from the Turks and Caicos Islands, where he will be until the 13th of December. Find him on all bands, 6-meter through 160 on CW and SSB, QSL via his home call. Time for you to identify your station. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the Silver Creek Amateur Radio Association's 2-meter repeater, W8WKY, Tuesdays at 7:30 p.m. local time in Doylestown, Ohio. In this special third segment of Newsline, we recall the attack on Pearl Harbor 75 years ago with a special report from Amateur Radio Newsline's Paul Brown, WD9GCO. Paul talked to three hams who are veterans of World War II and remember that day well. Paul?
As we approach the anniversary of the attack on Pearl Harbor, I wanted to share some stories from three men that I interviewed earlier this year. All three have been hams since before World War II, and all three are veterans with a tale to tell. Arthur Kunst, W3WM, was actually on the air when the attack happened. As he recalled,
I was operating someplace about the area about 1 to 1:30 or so, and suddenly the do-gooders on the band said, "Get off the band, get off the band." And that's something I'd never heard before. The kind of commanding presence, and I didn't really know who had that kind of responsibility to do that. So a lot of us just simply listened and ignored that because we had no other information.
News traveled slow in those days. The family gathered around the broadcast radio to see if they could find anything more out.
And then later on, we listened to the radio, because we had no TV, listened to the radio, and then further explanations came along as to what was going on. That was the last official time that I operated. It was on Pearl Harbor Day.
Kunst was in the Navy and was stationed in the harbor at Okinawa when the war ended, and hams were finally allowed back on the air.
Someplace along the line, while there, and that would be in 1946, we had found out that amateur radio operation was permitted again, and somehow the word got to us. And we got on the air with our naval gear. I had a Collins, which I used there in the harbor. And I couldn't believe it. There were so many radio amateurs among the fleet forces over there. And we're having QSOs here on that band in Okinawa in 1946. It was, of course, it was not official. It was really technically banned. So that's the first time I got back again in 1946.
Another World War II veteran, Cliff Cahart, W4KKP, is still active on the air at 104 years old. Cahart was visiting his parents when the attack happened and was listening to the ham bands on a shortwave receiver that he had bought for them. He echoed the confusion and disbelief that many felt when they were suddenly told to get off the air.
My mother had a shortwave radio that I had given her, and they tuned in, and that was capable of tuning in the amateur radio bands. Of course, I would buy a radio like that. So I turned on the radio when I got there, and I heard an amateur say they ought to take his license away from him. He sang that the Japanese are bombing Pearl Harbor. You know, that's a terrible thing for him to say. Well, he was quite accurate.
Cahart was in the Signal Corps during the war.
I was in the military, the Signal Corps, the 3116th Signal Service Battalion, headquartered in Hawaii. But they sent me out to Iwo Jima when that battle happened, to install the administrative radio station for Iwo Jima, which I did. I landed a day after the flag was raised on Mount Suravachi.
And it was there, on Iwo Jima, that he saw a now-famous airplane fly overhead.
I was waiting out at the airstrip there. We had an air raid warning, and there was no ISF on the airplane, so It was a legitimate aircraft warning. However, after a while, we looked up, and here was a single B-29 flying way overhead right past Iwo Jima. I thought, that's very unusual. Our B-29s are landing and taking off now from Iwo Jima. What is he doing? Anyway, I got on the airplane and went to Guam, and in the middle of the night, I heard a lot of shouting outside, so I got up and went out, and I asked, what's all the noise about? They said, well, we dropped an atom bomb on Hiroshima. I said, my gosh, they finally cracked the atom.
After the surrender of Japan, Cahart started to think radio again.
Then the war ended, and I began to think ham radio. The first wavelength that the SEC opened was 112 meter band. So I built a rig for that and got on the air and talked to all the guys down below on the island, and I had a wonderful time.
There's also Robert Leo, W7LR, one of the founders of Thailand's RAST organization. He was also a very skilled CW operator and had developed the ability to copy down the Japanese code transmissions with great accuracy. Near the end of the war, he was assigned close to Midway Island to copy the Japanese code to make sure that the code breakers could send good intel to the fleet, including Admiral Nimitz.
Now, most of the admirals in back east, they wanted him to wait till mid or late June to get there. But he said, no, I believe in the Japanese code that you guys have figured out. I didn't figure it, but I mean, I copied it. But anyway, some of the people that figured that out, he believed in it. And so he got to Midway early. And as you know, we didn't have near as many ships as the Japanese. It was, they must have had three or four times as many. But they didn't use them right. And so they sent some to Alaska, and some they held back, and some they didn't do their air attack correct. And so that was really a turning point in the war, because we won that Battle of Midway because of some of those things.
So to Arthur Kunst, Cliff Cahart, Robert Leo, and all of you veterans of World War II, we here at Amateur Radio Newsline thank you for your service. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Paul Brown, WD9GCO.
Thank you, Paul, and veterans, and a special salute to our World War II vets. With thanks also to Allen Labs, the Aiken South Carolina Standard, the ARRL, the Battleship Iowa Amateur Radio Association, CQ Magazine, CNN, Dave Coulter Memorial Youth DX Adventure, Hap Holly and the Rain Report, Irish Radio Transmitter Society, Keith Miller, N9DGK, the New Hampshire Union Leader, Ohio Penn DX Bulletin, Rutherford County Aries, Southgate Amateur Radio News, Ted Randall's QSO Radio Show, the Tri-State Amateur Radio Association, Wireless Institute of Australia, WTWW Shortwave, Youngsters on the Air, and you, our listeners. That's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Please send emails to our address at newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website at www.arnewsline.org. For now, with Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT, at the news desk in New York, and our news team worldwide, I'm Jim Dameron, N8TMW in Charleston, West Virginia, saying 73. And as always, we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2016, all rights reserved.